Welcome to the Fuller Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording. It is 1:22 p.m. that is Pacific Standard Time. Today is March 3rd. The Federal Reserve cut interest rates today by 50 basis points. That followed on from Australia having cut interest rates by 25 basis points, took them down to a new low. And the big point here, of course, is that these events are happening outside of regularly scheduled central bank meetings. So they fall into the emergency cut category. Generally speaking, when the Federal Reserve is forced to cut interest rates in an emergency fashion, stock markets don't generally take that very well, because investors conclude that the central bank is always late. And then there is, of course, the delayed transmission between cutting interest rates and when it actually starts to show up in the economy. What they are obviously trying to do is to stoke investor confidence that they are willing to do whatever it takes to avoid deflation. And deflation is certainly a challenge in this quarter and potentially the next quarter. But it's not a challenge indefinitely. It's not as if this virus is going to hang around forever. And just by simple mathematical logic, the more widespread it becomes, the greater the immunity of the population becomes, and the less efficacious its ability to spread will become. Of course, it would have to spread a lot more than it already has in order to create herd immunity. So we're not there yet, and there is certainly evidence of some paranoia. But the important point here is that the stock market pulled back extremely violently. That was a massive reaction against the prevailing trend. And we need to look at as much data as we can get our hands on to get some idea of what does it mean in terms of the consistency of the overall trend. I think we can see that the 3000 level was an area of resistance from the beginning of 2018 through until the end of 2019. And the index, despite the volatility over the course of the last 4 days, is still trading in the region of 3,000. So there is the potential that it is going to continue to find support in this area because it's the upper side of the underlying trading range. Now, when we look at the NASDAQ 100, it has bounced from the region of the trend mean and the previous peaks. And despite the fact that it was not quite able to hold on to the advance in here today, it is still above that psychological 8,000 level. Now, there was some evidence of accelerating trends in a significant number of the biggest companies in the world. I think most acutely, we had the very clear acceleration in Apple shares, and it pulled back violently last week to test the region of the trend mean. It has subsequently bounced. There is the potential here that we could be in for a prolonged ranging phase. And it's not as if Apple hasn't done this before. There have been plenty of occasions on which Apple accelerated, pulled back violently, and went sideways for up to 2 years. And there is the clear potential that that is what we're being presented with now. And that is perhaps, I think, the most likely scenario. When we then think about what's going on in Microsoft, then we also had a very clear overextension relative to the trend mean. We had a bounce yesterday, gave up some of that bounce in here today. There was a very clear acceleration as well here. Accelerations are a trend ending. They're a trend ending of undetermined duration. We have had now the majority of the overextension unwound. If this is the peak rather than a peak, it will sustain a move below the trend mean. We have not seen that yet. But when we look at the repercussions of interest rate cuts, well, obviously, when we look at the 2 year, for example, then we've seen a really quite profound contraction in the yield, and it has pretty much now unwound all of the yield expansion put in since 2016, and it has done so in a rather swift manner over the course of just 2 weeks. So there is obviously potential here for some consolidation. Then I think it is interesting to pay attention to the action in the futures market for the 10-year treasury. It surged higher in here today, and following an accelerated advance, it is quite normal to see that exhaustion sets in when you have an accelerated move and the last or the biggest dynamic in the acceleration happens on the last day of the acceleration. And that is potentially today. When we then zoom out again and look at the longer-term history, we don't generally tend to look at long-term futures price data because of changing coupons creates steps in the price data, but it's trading at a new all-time high. And I think that's rather significant that treasury prices are now at levels never seen before. And I think that's a rather significant factor because we do have the short-term overbought condition, and there is clear potential here that we're going to get some consolidation coming through. What I think is likely is that we're going to see additional expansion of central bank balance sheets. That is already underway. When we look at the total assets of central banks, it has cruised through 20 trillion in just the last week. It's up to 20.2, and that is a significant breakout in just the space of a couple of weeks. We have not seen levels to compare with the current level since June of 2018. I think we can clearly see when we zoom out and look at more history that there is a rounding characteristic to the chart over the course of the last 2 years, and that 20 trillion is a significant level, and that it is quite likely now that we're going to see additional upside in terms of central bank balance sheets. Obviously, part of the reason why it has been surging higher is because of the weakness of the dollar. The Fed's balance sheet is a large component of that index, but it is not the only one. And as the dollar weakens, it is going to put upward pressure on the value of what is sitting on the balance sheets of other central banks, and that is helping to flatter the availability of liquidity. But what it also helps to just ram home is the point that the dollar strength has been a factor in global illiquidity. And a weaker dollar is going to create liquidity just by virtue of the fact that other currencies rise against it. That's particularly true of Europe and Japan because they have been the carry trade currencies of choice for leverage traders. The euro was in additional positive territory in here today. It is now back above the trend mean. We have a failed downside break below 110. It is now the question whether it is going to hold that move above 110 and clearly break the downtrend over the course of the last couple of years. The Japanese yen also failed to break on the downside, or the US dollar failed to break on the upside, and it has now reversed. It is back below the trend mean, and this continues to represent a weak dollar environment against the major currencies. However, when we look at some of the emerging market currencies, then they continue to weaken. And the Indian rupee in particular has broken out or broken downwards against the US dollar. I think it is quite likely the dollar is going to go back up and test that 75 rupee level. That I think is hanging some questions over the ability of the Indian market to continue to rally. It was looking for a while like it was going to be able to sustain the move above the trend mean and not have another failed upside break. That hope was certainly punctured last week when it broke downwards. Now it's continuing to hold the 11,000 level. But a succession of failed upside breaks and a loss of momentum over the course of a couple of years, it does suggest that stops are getting raised. And the choppy action overall and the absence of a return or a positive return in 18 months is something that is going to weigh on investor sentiment. It suggests that stops are probably being raised up behind the lows. This kind of activity has type 2 top formation characteristics. We have not seen a massive reaction against the prevailing trend, which would be the hallmark of a top formation like that, but certainly the loss of momentum is something that needs to be paid attention to. When we look at, for example, a foreign listed in India fund like the JP Morgan India Trust, then it is back at the lower side of the range that's been forming now for 3 years, and it needs to continue to hold that 600p level. When we then think about, well, what exactly is going on in the credit markets? High yield spreads popped on the upside last week. They're now trading around the 500 basis point level. Well, back in 2011 and in 2015, moves are sustained moves above the 500 basis point level were coincident with deeper corrections in the stock market. So at this 500 point level is basis point level is obviously something that needs to be monitored. Then when we look at the banking sector, obviously the cut in interest rates is intended to be stimulative, but when we think about the S&P 500 banks index, it gave up all of its advance. It is right back on the lows around 300. This has been an area of support on multiple occasions over the course of the last couple of years, but the reality is that banks have just suffered a 50 basis point cut to their margins, and the prospect of additional interest rate cuts and central banks stepping up to do whatever is necessary is likely to benefit markets over the medium term, but it's probably going to come at the expense of the banking sector, and that is going to inhibit the ability of banks to increase their credit creation abilities. So that is something that we need to pay attention to. If banks are breaking on the downside, then that is a lead indicator for trouble in the market generally. Over the course of this bull market, banks have not been the outperformers that they might have been. But some of the bigger banks have been able to perform more or less in line with the wider market. If that starts to change because of tightening liquidity, then that is a warning that something untoward is starting to evolve in the credit markets. The repo market was oversubscribed yesterday, and that I think is going to bring back into the conversation that the Federal Reserve has had to step in to support the repo market since October. They had been trying to tail back the assistance they've been providing over the course of the last couple of months, and you can see that the Fed's balance sheet has pretty much been going sideways for all of this year because they've been restricting the amount of additional capital they're making available. But with lower interest rates, banks are going to have less capital to be able to clearly participate in the repo market, and that means the Fed is going to have to step up, and I think that is quite likely. So we're going to see the Fed's balance sheet continue to expand. That is going to add additional impetus to the aggregate figure. So I think that is something that is potentially bullish. One thing that I think is getting less discussion is not so much about the coronavirus, which is getting discussion just about everywhere. And that is despite the fact that while the number of fatalities is rising, the the fatalities are very much concentrated in the less productive part of the economy. So we're almost certainly going to have a hiatus in a number of countries in order to try and stop the spread. There are going to be measures underway to actively combat it, and that could potentially weigh on growth for the next qu for this quarter and potentially next quarter. But we are likely to see the transmission mechanism for much lower interest rates and for considerably more liquidity being made available start having an effect on the economy, but most particularly on asset prices and on the purchasing power of currencies. So gold prices were in positive territory in here today, up almost $50, completely unwinding the downward dynamic that we had 3 days ago. It has, in that process, unwound about half of its overextension relative to the trend mean. And again, I think when we look at this on the longer term basis, this continues to look like a recovery scenario with a series of ranges, one above another. And while there is still an overextension relative to the trend mean, this continues to look like an uptrend. And it's not difficult to understand why. With the quantity of liquidity and assistance that is being provided to markets, the purchasing power of currencies is the price for all of that assistance. But it is likely to stoke investor interest. Now, something that we have to at least consider is that interest rates may fall further, and that demand for bonds will push even more bonds into negative territory, negative yielding territory. That measure is up right now to approximately 14.24 trillion, but it has clearly broken the downtrend down from the peak in August to the low in January. And I think there is ample scope here for it to continue to rally from here. That suggests that the very abrupt sell-off we had last week in gold shares was nothing more than contagion. And while it was not able to hold its advance in here today, the GDX has certainly bounced from the region of the trend mean. There are a significant number of the gold miners have all-in sustaining costs significantly below $1,000, and gold is trading closer to $1,600. So they are picking up approximately $700 of margin on every ounce of gold they're producing. And if we're going to bet on one sector to beat expectations when earnings are released for the first quarter, then I think it's reasonable to expect that gold miners are going to be among the better performers. Then, when we think about the oil price, we certainly had the upside Q reversal yesterday, and it held on to the advance in here today. There is the scope for a further unwinding of the short-term oversold condition, but then I think it's going to be more difficult to make a bullish case for oil outside of a limited supply argument, and we haven't yet seen the number of bankruptcies in the shale sector increasing. And sorry, I think that is not the one that I was looking for. When we look at high yield energy spreads, they have surged up and out of the most recent range. They're currently around 8.7% or 877 basis points, and there is clear scope for additional upside. I don't think we're going to see a real a low that we can bet on in the oil price until we start to see some of the more leveraged suppliers get squeezed out of the market. And this surge in high yield spreads for energy does suggest that that kind of development is imminent. I think, though, that when we think about the impact of the coronavirus, it's reasonably temporary in nature. And there is the potential that it will get better during the summer and potentially get worse again in the winter. The next time we get an outbreak, after a lull, I think economies will be better prepared, will have a better idea of how to deal with it, and the economic impact will probably be less. But the potential for Bernie Sanders to become the US president is something that could be with us for 4 years. And I think that that is one of the more pressing reasons for why we've had this uptick in volatility. I think that's also something that voters will be keenly aware of. Now, I thought I would also show you the TED spread because it was one of the primary measures that was reflective of stress in the banking sector back in 2008, and it was surging higher. Now it is still at reasonably depressed levels, and there is a downward bias to the spread over the course of the last 2 years. But there's no denying that volatility has certainly picked up in the last couple of years relative to the very quiet environment we had in the preceding 3 or 4 years. And it is when it starts to trend higher that we have clear evidence of stress in the banking sector. So we're not there yet, and there is scope here that the spread will not break on the upside, but certainly the volatility has increased. And speaking of volatility, I think we should be keeping an eye on the VIX index. It was as low today as 25, as high as about 42, and closed up on the day. It has certainly pulled back from 50. If it were to contract tomorrow, then that would certainly help to support the view that a meaningful low has been found in the markets. If, on the other hand, we see the VIX index trading above 50, it is likely to be coincident with at least a retest of the 1,000-day moving average. And I do think that the 1,000-day moving average is about the most reliable indicator of the health of a secular bull market that we might wish for. And we've seen the overextension relative to it more than halved over the course of just 1 week. We're right in the region of the trend mean. If the index were to sustain a move below the 1,000-day moving average, then that would be a very significant inconsistency in relative to the decade-long bull market. It would be a time when unleveraged investors really should be thinking about whether they want to continue to hold, because it would represent obviously a very significant pullback from the peak, but it would probably coincide with a significant economic contraction as well. So we're not there yet. We're certainly at a point where the market is attempting to find a near-term low. There is the scope that continued assistance, both monetarily and from the fiscal authorities, could help to support markets and confidence. And of course, if we get better news on the coronavirus front and better news on who the Democratic nominee for president is going to be, then that would obviously assist in the ability of the markets to find support. But one way or the other, the assistance being provided to the market is creating demand for bonds. It is depressing government bond yields, and it's likely to be a tailwind for gold prices. And I think with that, I will leave you for today, and I wish all the best to all of you.